Our gospel reading is short. Passage I never really noticed until the last week. Luke 8, 1 to 3. Soon afterwards, Jesus went through cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, as well as some women who had been cured of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Herod's steward Chuza, and Susanna, and many others who provided for them out of their resources. Jesus broke the rules. He didn't just bend a few social conventions. He violated social taboos and broke cultural and religious rules about relating to women. And he broke the rules, I believe, not for the sake of breaking the rules, but because he valued women, he cared about them as human beings, as children of God, just as he cared for many others who were seen as inferior or in some way outcast or unclean in his society, in his time. It's easy for us from our 21st century perspective to miss how radical he was and have that, missing that, be partly shaped about how patriarchal we've been told the Bible and the church have been, and they have been through the years. But I think it's important to remind ourselves, to claim that Jesus chose to be in relationships of respect and love with women against all the rules of his time. A book I use as a resource is by a man named Kenneth E. Bailey, who spent 40 years living and teaching in the Middle East. It's a book called Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes, Cultural Studies in the Gospels. Bailey writes that in spite of that Genesis claim that God, humankind, male and female, created fully in the image of God, in spite of that, in spite of some exceptional Old Testament women like Ruth and Naomi and Deborah and Esther and others, in general, men in Jesus' day saw women, for sure, as inferior. Rabbis taught women were meant to be wives and mothers and nothing more. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Ben Sirach wrote that women were not to be trusted, unfit to own property. They were responsible for bringing sin into the world, and they were a source of great trouble and spite, and he advised against spending time talking to women. In the social customs of the day, no good Jewish man would ever speak to a strange woman or make eye contact with her, and a good rabbi wouldn't even speak to his own wife in public in front of other people. Good men and women certainly would never have physical contact with anyone outside of their family. But Jesus was different. Think about it. Think of the stories, the women who asked from him for healing that he talked with, the woman who touched his robe because she wanted healing, the woman who washed his feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. Again and again, he violated the rules and let women relate to him, person to person. We have to wonder why he was like this. I give Mary a lot of credit. This woman we know is the mother of Jesus. Think about it. She had spoken directly with the angel Gabriel. She had said yes to being the mother of the Messiah. She sang in her Magnificat of being lifted up and exalted by God. And she sang of God's mercy and justice for the poor and the oppressed. Mary must have been a powerful, deeply spiritual woman. That's the woman who raised Jesus. And he became a radically different kind of rabbi than the general rule. A rabbi who talked to women, all sorts of women, even women who were seen as having a bad reputation or women who were not Jewish. The woman caught in adultery, women possessed of evil spirits, women seen as unclean because of their illnesses, the Samaritan woman at the well, the Syrophoenician woman who wanted her child to be healed. He talked with them as equals. He engaged them in theological conversation. He even let women be his disciples. Remember that story about Mary and Martha, Mary sitting at his feet while her sister Martha bustled around cooking? Kenneth Bailey suggests that the reason Martha was so upset was not really that she wanted more help. It was more about the fact that Mary was sitting at his feet, which is what disciples did with the teacher. Mary had chosen to sit there as a disciple, and Jesus told Martha that that would not be taken away from her, that Mary had chosen the good portion. And then there's this little tidbit in Luke. Have you ever heard that passage and noticed it much before? I had not. Here we read that along with the 12 men Jesus had chosen, there were women who went along with them. The implication is they were actually traveling with this group of men. Kenneth Bailey says that even though customs today are much more relaxed in the Middle East than they were in the first century, he could still not imagine this happening in traditional villages in much of the Middle East. Bailey is clearly shocked to think about these women traveling with a group of men to strange towns and villages. And the fact that this not only happened, but that Luke makes a point of writing that it happened is amazing. And Luke goes on to make sure we know that these women were helping pay for their food. They were funding the movement in its early days. Mary Magdalene is named, Joanna, the wife of Herod's steward, Susanna, and many others, Luke says. A word about Mary Magdalene. Recent studies, including a fragment of a Gospel of Mary Magdalene found in the last number of years, have caused scholars to reconsider how important a leader she was in the early church. The church for centuries devalued Mary Magdalene, even labeled her as probably having been a prostitute, though there's no evidence to support that. Instead, many scholars now believe she was a central figure, a leader in the early church. And remember, in John's gospel, she was the first disciple to talk with Jesus after his resurrection. And she became the first preacher proclaiming the news of his resurrection to the men back hiding in the upper room. And even in the other gospels, it is women disciples, last at the cross, first at the tomb. They were the ones who heard the angel's good news, saw the empty tomb, and ran back to tell the rest. Jesus chose to relate directly to women. He treated them as equals, claimed them as disciples, made them, allowed them to be full participants in the new community he formed. And women were the first witnesses to his resurrection. For all the ways the Christian church has, for much of its history, missed so much of this, women have always found ways to experience the love and liberating spirit of Jesus Christ. Again and again, women have found ways to claim that Jesus loved them, cared for them, and valued them for who they were. That Jesus wanted them to be their best and fullest selves. The Spirit of Christ has given women gifts and ministries, ways to be God's witnesses of love and good news, and has kept pushing women to claim their full and equal place in the family of God. The Spirit of Jesus, again and again, has found ways to keep breaking through and changing the church's understandings. And let us pray that that continues. So many churches still don't get it. So we're blessed, as we've heard, the First Baptist Church caught on, maybe always held, we can't really tell, but certainly early in our history became a part of that liberating understanding of women's equality and value. We don't know what our first members thought or said about women, but we know in that original list there were women as well as men who were members. As Baptists, I believe we can claim that they would have had a vote, just like the men. And we know Also, and we can talk more about this at another time perhaps, but in the 1800s, Baptists organized in this country around missions. And that missions, going as missionaries, fundraising for missions, working for missions, became one of the ways that women's groups and women were the most active in Baptist churches. And I want to at least name the name of Ann Judson, because Adoniram and Ann Judson became the first Baptist missionaries going out from the United States when they went to Burma in 1812. They started as Congregationalists and on the ship were convicted by reading the Bible of the value of believers' baptism. And when they got to Calcutta, they had William Carey baptize them as Baptists with an adult baptism. And then they were Baptists without support back home. And they sent Luther Rice back to raise funds, and Ann Judson became one of the important voices, faces of Baptist missions. At one point, Adoniram was imprisoned by the King of Burma, and she stood up before the king to plead for his life, went day after day with taunting to make sure he got food, later came back to the States and spoke in hundreds of churches, raising funds for Baptist missions in Burma and other places. For many women in the 1800s, missionary service was the way to find a vocational path of ministry and Christian service. The first ordination of a woman by a Baptist church we know of was in 1876 in Pennsylvania. That was a Free Will Baptist church. The first American Baptist woman ordained was in 1882 in Washington State. And we know that by 1890, we had a pastor here who advocated for women's suffrage. And we can imagine that if the pastor, who was a man, was doing that, there were a lot of other people, including many women, who were on board. And as Edie said, we can make more than an educated guess about what his wife thought. Men who support women's equality have strong and capable wives. And we know a whole lot more about our other most long-tenured pastor and his wife, David and Grace Evans, two strong people who believed in women's equality. During their time here, we began ordaining women. We had women serve in professional ministry roles on our staff. I'm not going to go through the whole list. I think we should make sure it gets listed in the next visitor. But as early as 1959, we had a woman serve as a staff director of religious education. But then once David Evans was here, we had women serving in associate assistant ministry roles, including Sister Loretta Jordan, the Catholic nun. I love that. I know those of you who have been around remember these names. Linda Isham, Loretta Nunn, Reverend Ruth Phillips Hike, and then some of you in various roles. The first woman that was ordained here was Elizabeth Olney Stroop in 78, then Janelle Evans, Diana Gibbons in 1985, Margie Latham in 1994. Since then, Robin Lunn, Ozzie Heathcrump, Debbie Allen, not sure if I'm missing others. Reverend Ivy Morrell Farron, first woman pastor, interim here from 89 to 90 while the Evans were on study leave. And then Margie Latham was interim in 94 to 95 when David Evans left. And then you called Wendy DeMott Fambro. Talk about someone who comes from a strong family of women. I know the DeMotts. Three daughters, all ministers. And their mother was a force of nature. I know her. I knew her. Wendy became your first called settled pastor, 95 to 2005, and now I am your second. This commitment to equality, to equal valuing of all people, has shaped this congregation for a long time. And that understanding, that way of risking breaking rules, comes from our knowledge and understanding and love of Jesus Christ. And that understanding led us to not just bless and empower these women to have roles of leadership, but also to support women's access to birth control and abortions, to help get Planned Parenthood started, and building directly on that legacy to embrace members of the LGBTQ+ community, right? It's all connected. It's all about valuing people for who they are. It's all about seeing the importance of relating to people as human beings created in the image of God. And so we stand on this strong history, and the question for us is now always, who else? What other boundaries do we need to cross? What other people do we need to embrace? What other understandings do we need to grow in ourselves, to reach out? There's new ways of talking about gender identity and sexual orientation, non-binary, gender non-conforming. Some of us have confessed we don't quite know how to understand it all, but we know we want to be loving. We want to be relating. We want to value young people in this congregation, finding that identity for themselves and all around us here in Ithaca. Jesus chose relationships. He chose love. He chose to embrace all people created in the image of God. That is our history, and that is our call. Thanks be to God.